This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
He's the director of a new British science fiction film. It's called Moon. It's being shown at this year's festival. Duncan Jones, welcome. Bring him on.
How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Although I'm disappointed I got dragged out of Transformers 2, so.
How far did you get? Did you get to the bit when John Turturro came on, or did you not get that far?
Didn't get that far.
Same as Simon then, basically.
I had to go after 50 minutes, but I kind of got a general.
Had to go after 50 minutes.
I think they win. I hope I'm not giving anything away.
Well, the good robots the good robots. The bad robots. Yeah, and you brought. Look at this. He's brought us some popcorn.
No, he's brought himself some popcorn.
I don't. I don't think so. He might have thought he's brought it for himself. There's a lady over here who brought her lunch, and what she had was an egg sandwich. Would you like some of Duncan's popcorn? There you go. I hope that was okay, Duncan.
Yeah, it's fine.
Tell us about Moon. Looking forward to seeing this.
Yeah, it's a British independent science fiction film, which is fairly unusual because. It's quite difficult to do science fiction films independently because normally they cost quite a lot of money. But we did this one for just a pittance.
$5 million.
$5 million, so about £2.5 million when we made it.
And was that a real struggle? So
yeah, it is a struggle because, I mean, with science fiction films, you're building sort of entire sets. You're building all of the props and costumes and everything else, and you can't really get things off the shelf. You have to make everything, and then there's the special effects on top of that. And for an independent film, we had over 450 effects shots, so it's quite ambitious.
Yeah, and it stars Sam Rockwell, so just give us... We'll talk more the other side of the news, which is coming out about a minute's time, but just explain where we find Sam Rockwell. Clearly on the moon, hence the title, but fill in some of the blanks.
Sam Rockwell plays an astronaut, a guy called Sam Bell, who's working on the far side of the moon at a mining facility where he's got a three-year contract to basically be caretaker for this base. And he's coming towards the end of his 3 years, and during one of his routine extractions, where he sort of drives around in these little rovers, these moon rovers, to go and collect the helium-3 from these harvesters that travel the surface of the moon, he has an accident. And when he wakes up, he finds himself back in the base, which is kind of odd because he's been working there on his own, and he doesn't know how he got back there. That's kind of the setup for the mystery.
Right. And who does he see?
Well, he ends up seeing a new employee who looks remarkably like himself.
We're at City World, where the audience sort of they drift in, and Mark and I, and then they drift out again, and Mark and I think, have they gone to see Transformers? And actually, they're going to the toilet.
Yeah, but as you said before, going to see Transformers and going to the toilet are very, very close experience.
Well, except one lasts a few minutes. And the other one doesn't. Yes. Well, not normally. Anyway, so welcome back to Edinburgh, where the audience is live, educated, and in... You can watch it at bbc.co.uk/5live. Now, we've been discussing Moon, which is this new movie from Duncan Jones. It's your first go at a
first
big feature
film. Yeah, first feature, absolutely.
So how nervous are you about this?
It's been incredibly nerve-wracking. We opened in America last week, so that was nerve-wracking. But coming back to Britain, which is obviously where we made the film, where we're all from, that's more nerve-wracking.
How come you've ended up making... films? Because you've got a fairly kind of circuitous route.
A long route, yeah. Well, I, you know, when I was a kid, my dad and I used to make
short films. Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Just in case, his dad is David Bowie, right? So, therefore, when he says, my dad and I, just so that you have the picture in your mind, he's not just a bank manager.
He would have made a very good bank manager, I'm sure. He's a very talented man.
Anyway, so we'd spotted that. Mark and I were speculating earlier, you know, how long is it possible to go through an interview with you before mentioning your
dad? Didn't take long, did it?
Well, excuse me. We probably went longer than anyone else.
That's true.
Anyway, so yes, I interrupted you and your dad.
Yeah, we used to make little one-stop animations on an old 8mm camera and, using Star Wars figures and Smurfs and things. I know. Sad. I was only about 6 or 7 years old, though, so you got to give me that.
Sounds a bit like the Transformers stuff I saw. A little bit of cheaper version.
I might try and swap reels next time. You know?
But that's when you're very young.
Yeah, that was when I was very young. But basically, that kind of kept me interested in filmmaking. Then when my dad was working as an actor, I used to sort of be on sets for films. So things like Labyrinth, and there was a film called Absolute Beginners where they had this amazing set. It was like a couple of square blocks of Soho in the 1950s. And just the whole idea of being on or being on these amazing, beautiful, realistic sets, just these worlds that had been created, I think that gave me the bug to work in film. But then I took a very long detour into academia and went off to university and then graduate school. It took me a long time before I came back.
Yeah, and you studied philosophy?
I did.
Do you think that's evident in the film? Because there are, you know, it's quite profound.
You'll have to ask Mark, really.
Mark, tell us about Moon.
See, here's what I like about this film, and it's interesting that we're saying this in the same week that Transformers 2 is coming out. There was a time, and I know this always sounds like, oh, it was, but we're better in my day. There was a time when science fiction was about things. Science fiction was about ideas. It wasn't about special effects. And even what once constituted a big special effects movie, like Stanley Kubrick's 2001, was essentially an ideas film with some special effects in it. Now, when I saw Moon, it reminds me of all the films that I liked when I was growing up, and I'm 10 years older than you. So with Silent Running, the idea of somebody marooned in space on their own, that idea of somebody going, it reminded me of Solaris to some extent. I think there's a little bit of Soylent Green in there, although I hesitate to say that because it's like all the science fiction films that began in S in the early 70s is what it reminded me of. It was a time when science fiction was seen as being about ideas rather than being about stuff blowing up. And anybody who's going to see Transformers 2, and if you are, shame on you. It's a hideous thing. And no, and seriously, you're just encouraging them to carry on doing it. And if you do go and see it, it is your fault. Be clear about that. In the case of Moon, it's a throwback to those kind of films that I grew up with. And the reason I asked you, it seemed rudely when we were off, as I said, how old are you, is because I kind of imagined, I'm sorry, I'm bad with dates, that of course you must have been, as I was, 10 or 11 when Silent Running and all those and Solaris came out, to have been embedded, because it seems to me that those are the films that you're referring back to. But of course, actually, you're of an age in which you grew up, as you say, with Star Wars, which for me doesn't have so many ideas, although, of course, it has many more ideas than Transformers 2.
Is that a question in there?
No, because you asked me whether or not I thought that it was in relation to
about
philosophy.
Stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a film about something. And actually, Solaris is a very good example, because Solaris, of course, is a famous first version of Solaris, and Solaris was remade with George Clooney. In English, everyone was very rude about the remake. I actually think the remake was a pretty good film. In some ways, I think the remake is more watchable than the original film, but it's about that idea that space is about loneliness, and space is about isolation. And the thing that Duncan's not telling you about the film, because obviously we don't want to give away the story of Moon, is that it is about that idea of being alone with yourself, quite literally with himself, at least twice.
Alone again.
Alone again, naturally, in space, on his own. And, of course, it stars Sam Rockwell, who is a very fine actor. And when the microphones were off, I was just saying, tell me that Sam Rockwell is a nice person, because he's one of those people you want to know that he's nice, because he's a very, very good actor. But no, it's an idea. It's a science fiction movie with ideas that's about things and not about robots hitting each other.
And it still looks good.
Oh, no, it does. And in fact, I mean, but all those movies I referred to, I think Silent Running looks brilliant. I think Solaris, I think those movies look good. And I think there is a real allure in the you know, the melancholic sci-fi movie, because in the end, sci-fi movies, those kind of movies, they are about the great unknown. They are about being alone in the universe with yourself, and you know, part of that is to do with the magic. I mean, one of the things that some of the shots reminded me of, and I don't mean this in any way negatively, is Space 1999, because of course, actually, for my age, if you grew up, there was an entire melodrama playing out on the moon, which is Space 1999, which I actually thought was a fantastic looking TV series. But yes, it looks very good, but in the end, it's about ideas.
Does anything get blown up?
Yes, some stuff blows up.
there's a couple of small explosions towards the end, but the effects are actually that are in the film are sort of used in a very different way. They're sort of more contextual than I think the kinds of effects that you get in a film.
I just wonder if you're working on such a tight budget, if you almost come to resent any explosion because it costs too much money, and you'd rather actually put the money into something else.
I think because we kind of knew how we wanted to approach the film, because I'd had a background in commercials before I did the film, and I had a sort of a pretty good idea of where I could be cost-effective and where I could save money. So we had this approach that allowed us to really stretch the budget as much as we could. And that meant that even though there are quite a lot of effects in the film, we were able to make it work for an independent film budget.
Are you concerned at all that actually you are not anonymous anymore? That actually you're going to be in the spotlight, as you are here in Edinburgh. People are going to want to talk to you, and you know, you're going to have a very high profile. Are you happy with that? Because you sort of avoided it, haven't you?
I have avoided it, and my choice would have been to avoid it now as well. Unfortunately, Sam Rockwell is pretty much the only actor in the film, and he's been doing, you know, the new Iron Man film. So as far as sort of publicizing and talking to people about the film and getting them enthusiastic about it, it's kind of the responsibilities on my shoulders, and I want the film to do as well as I can. So I'm sort of putting myself out there as the face of the film for now.
Sorry, there are two things I need to say about this. The first is, I didn't know when I saw the film that you were... I didn't know your name. I'm very bad at reading press notes for a start.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad about that I didn't know anything about you before seeing the film. The other thing is that you say there's only one actor. Well, of course, there is. You know, there's the voice of the computer, which relates very clearly to the HAL computer in 2001.
Absolutely.
It's the kind of benevolent version of HAL. So tell us who that is, because that's a star.
Well, I mean, basically, from the very start, as soon as we'd written the script, we knew that we wanted Kevin Spacey to be the voice of Gertie, who's the robot in the film. And there's a very good reason for that. Kevin Spacey has this sort of natural sort of cadence and slightly amoral quality to his voice. And I don't know if that's just because of the baggage that he brings with him because of the films he's done in the past. But you kind of just immediately feel that and sense that with his voice. So it kind of creates this connection with Hal, which is obviously, you know, something that everyone who comes to the film will bring with them.
Well, I also thought that he had possibly been cast in that because of his role in K-Pax, which is, I think, is a very underrated British science fiction movie directed by Ian Softley, in which he plays this alien who has this quality which may be immoral. Or, I mean, nobody's quite sure, but it's an otherworldly quality.
And are you sticking with science fiction for your next film?
I hope so. I mean, it depends. If Moon goes well and people sort of like this kind of science fiction, then...
Which they do. Please keep doing it so people will stop making Transformers movies.
I will try. The next film sort of takes place within the same universe, although it's back here on Earth and it takes place in a future Berlin, and it's a lot more Blade Runner-y than Moon.
Both of which sound very exciting. But and there's one other film that's been associated with you, and I just wanted to run the title past you because I understand it's like a submarine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Film, which sounds very exciting, except that the title of the film is Escape from the Deep.
Yes.
Well, it kind of gives it away the ending, doesn't it?
It does, but it's actually based on a true story. It's more than based. It is a true story, and it's an absolutely unbelievable true story about a submarine in the USS Navy that towards the end of World War II, on its last mission, its last torpedo malfunctioned, went in a big circuit, and it literally sunk itself. And a group of submariners actually escaped from this submarine that was 180 feet underneath the water while they were being depth charged by the Japanese Navy. Incredible story, and utterly ridiculous if it weren't the fact that it's true.
You could add an element of suspense by calling it Escape from the Deep? Escape from the Deep.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
With a kind of a camp wrist twist.
Escape from the Deep. Yeah. It's like Raise the Titanic, though, because at the end of Raise the Titanic, you know what happens? They raise the Titanic. But if they call it Raise the Titanic, then it would have perhaps done better.
A couple of questions. Duncan, why are you here? Patrick Kelly, listening in Malmo in Sweden. Is Moon based on the film Moonbase Zero? The premise sounds somewhat similar.
No, not at all. I haven't even heard of it, to be
there
honest. Sorry.
And you better go and
do some research.
And Stephen Leon, see, you've just seen the trailer for Moon. It appears to be playing a considerable homage to 2001. I mean, would that be fair? I mean,
Absolutely. I think 2001 is only one inspiration. I think when you actually watch the film, if you sort of know your sci-fi, you're going to find references to all sorts of films from that period.
Tell me that Silent Running is an inspiration, then make me happy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Huey, Dewey and Louie were fantastic characters, and the way that they actually did that effect was although we didn't use that effect, it was very inspiring to think of how you could actually be more creative and not use CG and go in different directions to do your special effects.
Yeah, good.
Duncan, it's been great talking to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you
for
very
your
much.
Popcorn, and thanks for coming to talk to us. Duncan Jones, ladies and gentlemen. Moon is the new film. When does it come out?
July 17th.
July 17th, look out for that. We'll do some questions to Mark in just a moment. Another guest as well. Mary Wright in County Durham, first of all. Dear Optimus Prime and Shia LaBeouf, I am missing out on your Edinburgh Film Festival due to a GCSE science exam this morning. But as the good doctor knows all, could he please tell me what the products are when calcium carbonate reacts with hydrochloric acid?
Salt.
Oh, I don't think so. Calcium carbonate. Anyone?
Calcium.
Anyone
it'll be salt, won't it?
HCl. So that's calcium carbonate plus HCl. Anyone know?
Calcium chloride.
Duh. There's a gentleman at the back with his hand up. Sir, you have a question for Mark.
Mark, good afternoon. My name's...
Where are you? Stick your hand up. Oh, there you go. Hi.
My name's Keith. I'm sure the audience isn't made of completely of Keiths, but there's another one. I'm from Edinburgh.
Hello, Keith.
Last year, I was lucky enough to see The Fall, which was on at premiere at last year's festival. I've never heard your views on it, and I'd be very interested to know what you think of what I think is a brilliant film.
Well, I'd love to tell you, but I don't think I've seen The Fall.
Very good. That's a good question. Thanks very much. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Ewan. I live just across the road.
Mark, where are you?
I'm here.
You sure you're not?
Can I just say, so far, this is going really well. Don't know anything about the thing. Haven't seen the film. Let's see how we're going.
Are you sure you're not called Keith?
I'm definitely not called Keith.
Okay, go on.
I'm definitely mildly excited to be here and to see you in your capacity as a film critic. But what I'd be really interested to know is when you plan on coming back up here in your capacity as a Dodge brother.
Well, I don't think, live.
No,
have we? We haven't played. Have we played? Dodge Brothers haven't played in Edinburgh before. I don't think. I mean, funnily enough, tonight at the end. Well, not tonight. At the end of this, at 4 o'clock, we're rushing to the airport because I'm playing a gig tonight in London with Wanda Jackson.
So I'm playing with
somebody who was actually in the same space as Elvis Presley. So I'm very, very excited. But no, we'd love to because, of course, funnily, this was where I learned to play double bass with the band that I was with before, the Railtown Bottlers, because we came up here busking. And, you know, I play slap bass. And the only reason I play slap bass is because we went busking in Edinburgh. And I was just playing ordinary walking double bass. And about three or four, because there was a very big rockabilly scene in Edinburgh in the 1980s. And a couple of people came up to me and said, you know, can you not slap it? And I said, they said it in Scottish accents, obviously.
Because that certainly wasn't one.
And I explained that I could nor slap it. And so this guy with a very big quiff wrenched the double bass off me and explained how you slap the bass. And I did it, and my fingers bled until they blistered and healed up. And that's how I learned to play the bass. So I would love to come back here and do it, yeah.
There's a gentleman in the middle there with a question, and we'll have our next guest on. Yes, sir.
Right.
Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, go on.
Why did you change your name from Fairy to Kermode?
Because my mother's side of the family is Kermode, and my father's side of the family is Fairy, and my mother and father are divorced.
So we'll take one question just before we bring our next guest. There's a gentleman here with a very nice light blue T-shirt. Sir, there's the microphone, and you're on.
Hey, thank you. I might be a bit behind in this, but what do you think of Michael Sheen playing Blofeld in the new James Bond?
Well, look, I think Michael Sheen is great. I think Michael Sheen is really, really good in absolutely anything. In fact, funnily enough, we had him, he came on the show a couple of times, and he's one of those people who can, you know, he can turn his hand to absolutely anything. And, with a really talented actor, you can give them any role. I mean, actually, the thing that I refer to is, remember the new James Bond, you know, Craig Daniels. I remember when Daniel Craig first got the role, everybody said, well, he's wrong, he's the wrong size, he's the wrong shape, his hair's the wrong colour, his eyes are the wrong colour. He said, it doesn't make any difference, he's a brilliant actor. And actually, I think he is a brilliant James Bond. So I'm Michael Sheen can turn his hand to absolutely anything. He was in those Underworld movies, you know, running around in leather trousers being a werewolf, and he did that rather well.
And in fact, he said on the programme he far prefers doing that than doing the serious roles, which he always gets asked to do. So.
Yeah, well, you know, if somebody said you could either sit down and talk to somebody being Richard Nixon for 2 hours, or you can run around in leather trousers howling at the moon, which would you rather do? I think probably the leather trousers and howling at the moon would win.
Okay, let's bring on our next guest. It's 2:23. This is 5 Live at the Edinburgh International Film Festival. Ian Hart has a new movie out at the festival. It's called A Boy Called Dad. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Hart, come on, sir. Mind the cables. This is Ian Hart on 5 Live, and that is some popcorn.
Thanks.
For you.
Which
is brought by Duncan. Yeah, well, it is actually. It's been fingered by about 30 people in.
That's the biggest markup of any product in the world, popcorn.
Is it? What are the stats on that? You sound as though you've got...
I don't know. Read it in the Guardian, so it comes from a reliable source.
Absolutely. Well, you'll get on very well with Mark, then.
It is true that that's how... I mean, funnily enough, we complain about it, but that is how an awful lot of cinema chains make an awful lot of money, is by popcorn, because popcorn comes in tiny and then turns into a bag of that, and then the fizzy drinks, which come in concentrates and are then made up. So Ian is absolutely right.
That 25 is, pence.
That is where the money comes
it.
From, yeah.
£3.95 to buy it.
Well, let's not bite the hand that feeds us, eh? I'm sure it's very well priced here at Cineworld.
A due to global warming.
Absolutely.
We have to grow it in our own country soon.
So my 9-year-old was very excited. He said to me, where are you going? So I said, I'm going to Edinburgh. We're doing a programme there. Who have you got on? Okay, so I'm thinking, we've got Professor Quirrell.
There you go.
He said, wow. And that was the most exciting thing.
Exciting things ever happened to me as well, yeah.
And so much going on underneath that turban of yours. We talked about the first Harry Potter movie, of course, in which you were Professor Quirrell.
I was a Professor Quirrell, and there was also the Dark Lord himself, Voldemort, apparently. I didn't know that was until I watched the credits, and at the end I came back up twice. Also played Voldemort. Oh, there you go.
Did you know that you...
Well, they had another actor. They must have sacked him.
Did you know that you weren't going to make it through the film? That, you know, that everyone else was signed up and they'd be part of this huge franchise?
Yeah, the heavens.
You were going to die.
When I went for the audition, I went to the bookshop, Waterstones, around the corner, and I said, have you got the Harry Potter book? She went, yeah. And the girl got off and came back with it. So I was outside flicking through it, thinking, well, it's not much of a part, this. You know what I mean? Because I had book 2, which I'm not in. So I'm looking through this book thinking, ah, crap, I've gone for another bad part again, you know what I mean? That's it. So I went for the audition very casually, very relaxed about the whole procedure, because I thought it'd only be 5 minutes this.
I'm sure Jason Isaacs has told us. Hello to Jason. Yeah.
Hello, Jason.
Have we said hello to Dave Morrissey yet?
No, we haven't. No, should we do that?
Yeah.
Hello, hi, Dave.
Actually, well, I think everyone, could you all say hello to David Morrissey? Yeah. I was a little bit half-hearted.
Yeah, I'll tell him.
Yeah. Hello to Jason Isaacs.
That was better.
Yeah, and hello, Stephen Fry. Okay. It's kind of petering out there towards the end. But Jason, I'm sure he tells this story that he wanted to be or auditioned for Quirrell, but actually he said, no, look, it's far better to get the role that you've got there, because actually you'll find that your bad character continues.
David Thewlis the same. I was working with David Thewlis, and he was saying, oh, they've offered me a part in this Harry Potter. I was like, no, that's the best, one of the best ones. I wish I'd have held on for a year or two, and I could have got a good job. But, we got nice little toys out of it and everything else. It wasn't a complete waste of time.
No. Are you an action figure?
Yeah, a Lego figure, mate.
You're a Lego figure?
Oh, I am.
Wow, does it look like you?
No. Well, it's got two heads, and you can turn it around, take the turban off.
Yeah, so it does look like you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. But then, and there's all the Mattel ones as well, you know what I mean?
So you're a Mattel action figure as well as a Lego action figure?
Two Mattel posable figures.
You have already achieved...
I think that does deserve a round of applause. Yeah, I think that is really...
That's where I started acting.
So I want to talk to you about A Boy Called Dad, so just stay with us. We thought we'd found the people who travelled furthest. The first two people in came from Leeds. And they were the people who were first in when we did the show from Leeds. Then we found some folk from Portsmouth, and they'd come up here specifically for the show. Then there's a lady at the back. She's come from the south of France. We got her a coffee. Well, we haven't yet. But that's on its way. And we thought we'd found a winner, but actually there's a gentleman up there. Should we just get a microphone to him? Earlier, Mark, you were being very rude about which country?
Well, I was saying that this was when Alan Cumming was here, and I was saying that, you know, you're when you do interviews in Cannes, I mean, you'll know this as well, you end up on a round table with seven people from different countries, and inevitably, and all that happens is a journalist from Finland asks you when you were last in Finland and what you think about Finnish television, and are you planning to come back to Finland anytime soon?
So, hello, sir, what's your name?
Juha.
Where are you from?
Finland.
Whereabouts in Finland are you from?
From Helsinki.
Yeah, and you've come here to Edinburgh specifically for the programme from Helsinki.
Yes.
Do you listen every week?
Yes, mostly as a podcast.
Yeah, and what do you think of Edinburgh?
Well, I arrived this morning, so I haven't had much of an impression yet.
And how long are you planning to stay?
Till Sunday.
Okay.
Can I just say, in order to recreate the majesty of a Cannes round table, since we have a Finnish person in the audience and a star here, would you like to ask Ian Hart a question?
Oh, what do you think about Finland?
Do you know what? I've never been.
Would you like to go to Finland?
I would like to go to Finland, of course. I'd like to go to Helsinki. What's your name again, mate?
Juha.
I'd like to go to his house. I was going to say his name then, but I thought, why bother? I can't. You know what I mean? I know full well I can't say it.
Juha, we appreciate you coming all the way from Helsinki for today's programme. Thanks very much. Need to give a round of applause for our Finnish guest. Ian Hart is here. His new movie is called A Boy Called Dad. Ian, tell us about this film.
Well, it's set in Finland.
You're just playing
nice
to the crowd.
You know what I mean? It's very slow. I've forgotten what was the question.
It was a really tricky one. Tell us about your new film, Ian. It's called A Boy Called Dad.
Well, it's about a boy called Dad. I play the dad of the boy who's called Dad. It's about a young boy who gets a girl pregnant and is not sort of in the child's life, so to speak. He's like a 14-year-old boy. And basically, through a series of events that happen, he steals his own son. He steals a baby and goes on the run. And it's about him, the boy Kyle, he's here at the back there, about how his journey of growing up.
Well, because Kyle, your co-star in the film?
Yeah.
And he's here as well?
Yeah, he's up there.
What's he doing up there?
He's watching us.
Come on down. Bring him on down. Come down, Kyle.
Come on, Kyle. Not to wait for everything. So Kyle plays a young man who's got a girl pregnant, steals the baby, goes on the run. And it's about his journey of trying to grow up, trying to realise what it is to be a father, having not had a father figure in his life, which is me, I'm the letdown dad, who tries to gain some kind of connection back with his son, tries to learn about how to be a dad. So it's basically he teaches his father how to be a father.
And Steve Evans is in.
Steve Evans is an ice cream.
We were talking about him last week because he is the little Eric in Ken Loach's Looking for Eric.
Yeah, he plays an ice cream vendor who dresses as an ice cream cone with a flake and everything. It looks he's great. You know what I mean? It's comedy, that bit.
Did he? Was that the part he auditioned for?
You have to ask the director about that. I'm sure he wanted a slightly better part. I'm sure he wasn't. He didn't even mention the costume when he came for the audition.
And Carlos wandered down your coast house. You were just at the back of the audience thinking you weren't going to get involved. But, Carl, good afternoon to you.
Thank you.
How are you?
All right, yeah.
Carl, ever been to Finland?
He's half Finnish on his dad's side.
Tell us about your character, Carl.
He's a troubled lad, pressured into things, I think, like most teenagers are. And he gets a girl pregnant, and then neglected by his own father.
Shoots the boyfriend. Don't forget that bit.
Oh, yeah, shoots the boyfriend.
That's quite late on in the film, mate. You shouldn't really give away that happens.
Oh, well, yeah. Sugar.
What you need to say is it's about generations of fathers failing their children.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
OK, Mark, tell us about the film.
Well, basically... Ian is the absent father, and Carl is also an absent father who decides to put himself back into the life of his child with dramatic consequences. I mean, I have to say, I saw it last night. It is very, very harrowing in certain places, and that's why Ian was sort of saying rather lightheartedly before, you know, it's a light romp. It's not, but it is about the role that parents can, and it's essentially about parents being children and children being parents, and what happens when there doesn't seem to be any adequate divide between those two. It was also interesting that when you were doing the horse racing thing, there was there's a number of scenes in the film in which Ian's character, rather than looking after his child, sits in a bookies sits in a betting office and yells at the television. I was wondering whether Ian had thought that we had recreated this just so you felt that it was a scene from the film.
But I was getting excited though towards
you
the
were,
end.
You were, yeah.
And this is filmed
in. I couldn't beat the winner. That fellow was useless.
In Wales and Nottingham and Skegness.
Yes, Skegness, yeah.
You were in Wonderland, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
The Michael Sheen film, which I'm sure we spoke to Michael about it at the time. Doesn't that go to Skegness? I'm trying to look for as many movie connect. I'm sure he spends the whole film taking as long as time as possible, ending up in Skegness. Is that right, Mark? Do you remember that?
I think he ends up in Blackpool, doesn't he? I don't think it's Skegness. When he's on the moped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he went to Blackpool.
It's very good. We'll ignore that line of questioning.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
Skegness is a lovely town. Anyone from Skegness in the audience? It's like Helsinki.
Not as good as Finland.
Hang on, Carl's got a line there.
I said not as good as Finland.
There you go. And when do we get a chance to see A Boy Called Dad coming out, Ian?
That is a question we have yet to have found an answer for. As always, distribution for independent English films or British films. They go, it said English now. I'm in trouble already. I know, yeah.
You might have got away with it, apart from the fact that you drew attention to it.
That has been a problem for quite some time. I don't know we have distribution at the moment, but I'm sure by the end of the festival we'll have secured said distribution. Yeah.
Ian, I really appreciate you coming in. Is this the film that we're going to see you in next, or is there anything else that's going to pop up with Ian Harting?
No, I'm doing some theatre, so no, I'll be off for a while.
But you have said that you were going to, because funnily enough, I should point this out. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ian's. I haven't met Carl before, but I'm a huge fan of Ian's from back in the days of Backbeat and working with Ken Loach. And I was once asked by Total Film magazine to describe my perfect British movie, and I said a movie directed by Ken Russell starring Ian Hart, and I bumped into Ian a couple of weeks ago in BAFTA, and you said that you were attempting to get a film off the ground that you wanted to direct.
Yeah, I'm trying to get sort of move, you know, to the other side of the camera, trying to direct. I've got a few little bits and pieces I've written or I'm trying to sort of cobble together. One's about the People's March for Jobs, which was a march in 81 from Liverpool to London. It seems that that kind of time span is repeating itself once again. The whole economic sort of disparity that we had then, we seem to have gotten back to that quite quickly. So it seems quite prescient. And there's another piece about drug dealing, which is probably, you know, again about the North-South divide back in the 80s when drugs were worth more in London than they were in the North.
And can I just say, sorry,
there'll be happy little films.
The other thing I want to say is that, of course, Ian is one of those people who's known for doing, you know, work that has, you know, that has some kind of message, work that actually means something. But I remember once I bumped into Ian in North London. I think you'd finished working with Loach or something, and I said, "What are you doing?" And Ian said, "Oh, it's very exciting. I got out of a car in a Tony Scott film." And that was it. That was your role, wasn't it?
The person who got out of the car.
Oh, you did it twice.
He brought me back 6 months later to get out of a slightly different car.
Ian, fantastic to have you on. Thanks very much indeed. Ian Hart and Kyle Ward, ladies and gentlemen. Their film is A Boy Called Dad. It's Nick in Plymouth. Simon, is it me or does the good doctor look remarkably like Michael Portillo today? There is that.
You know, funnily enough, not the first person to notice that. I used to write for a magazine.
Sight and Sound?
No.
Fangoria?
No.
Guardian? The Observer?
No.
Daily Telegraph?
New Statesman, but if I'd left you long enough, you would have got
it. I was running out of left-wing periodicals.
And there was...
Socialist Worker magazine?
I don't think that Fangoria classifies as a left-wing periodical, but I'll certainly have a word with them. And I was doing the film reviews, and Michael Portillo was the theatre critic. And they had photographs of us. Like, mine was on that side of the page, and Michael Portillo's was on that. And if you put the pages together, it looked like just the pictures had sort of stuck together. And you open them, and we got that kind of squishy thing of my face on Michael Portillo's face. And when you open them up, they both looked like Jesse Birdsall. And when I was off one week on Radio 5, Michael Portillo came in and stood in for me.
Yes, well, he read out some reviews.
Yes. How did he rate up against me?
I think there'd been a slight misunderstanding, and he thought what he had to do is to write a review and then come in and read it out. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually, he was supposed to just ad-lib, which he could have done perfectly well because he seemed like a nice bloke. Yeah. So obviously, he wasn't as good as you, Mark.
Yeah. So I was better than him.
Yes.
Great, good, fine. Good.
It is official. You're a better reviewer than Michael
Thank
Portillo.
You very much.
Blimey, that was torturous. Okay, so it's 3:09. Delighted to say we've been joined here in Edinburgh by Scottish movie legend Bill Forsyth.
Hey!
Doesn't get better than Bill Forsyth, who is here, but Mark is on his knees.
Have some popcorn. So Bill is one of my favourite filmmakers ever. So
explain why Bill has this particular position on your podium then, Mark.
I mean, there are so many films to choose from, but the thing that I've always gone back to is Local Hero. I mean, Bill,
can you blush on radio, yeah?
Yeah, you can.
You can, because Radio Vision will pick it all up.
Local Hero is one of the films that you and I agreed about very, very early on, as if you were picking, you know, top five movies ever made.
Yes,
Local
and
Hero
we both had it as the second best
film.
Both
had it as number two.
Yes.
With Simon, it was behind Amadeus. With me, it was behind The Exorcist. You and I have discussed this. It's okay.
I'm sure Bill is relieved to know that's okay then.
But he is essentially one of those filmmakers who made films that were really, really important in my sort of evolution of watching cinema, and whether it's Sinking Feeling or Gregory's Girl or Comfort and Joy, which of course I think is a wonderful piece of work, Local Hero, House. I mean, every single Bill Forsyth movie has something in it of the magic of cinema, something that actually reminds you just what a magical, transcendent form cinema can be. And, I mean, it's terrible, because I start talking about it, even now I'm starting to well up. I'm so moved by your cinema, and I'm so thrilled that you're here, Bill, because you are a genuine, living legend and a genius.
Oh, shucks. Well, I don't know what to say. Thanks for having me in the mall.
Was that embarrassing, Bill?
Everything's embarrassing for me.
Bill doesn't like watching his own films, and he doesn't like being praised, so that was excruciating for him. And the last time I was with him, we took him to Penland to go and we put on a screening of Local Hero in the place where it was filmed, and we showed it there in the newly built Village Hall with some people who'd been in the film, the original Cayley band. And we sat at the back of the hall watching this, and Bill and I talked, which of course we shouldn't have done during the course of the film.
Well, the one thing that you always lecture everybody about is people who make a noise in the cinema, people who talk in the cinema, people who eat noisily in the cinema.
Yeah.
And then just because you were on the Culture Show and on television, you sat at the back of the cinema with Bill and you talked all the way through the film.
And I get into real trouble for it, because it turned out one of the comments I made was about the lighting in one of the scenes, one of the night scenes. And the next thing, I got an email from Chris Meng, as the guy who'd shot it, 25 years ago, and said, "You should have said you wanted it that way." You know?
Why do you have that response, Bill, to your films? I mean, and you've been quoted in the past saying that you don't own a copy of Local Hero.
Well, no, I wouldn't have anyone to keep it. I mean, I'd have to keep it under the bed or whatever. They're better off in fridges, these celluloid prints, anyway. Nowadays, with CDs, if somebody wants to send me a CD, I'll be quite happy with that. But,
well, Bill, it is possible to go and buy a DVD of your own work.
Yeah. I have been known to creep around Blockbuster and check out the cassettes and see if they're there. They used to have two, down in Party in Glasgow, they used to have two of Comfort and Joy, you know, with Billy Paterson with his nose with an ice cream cone on it. So I used to walk past that most Friday nights and see if anyone was watching it.
But you were famous for not watching it, because one of the things that Bill said when we were watching Local Hero, and we'd gone through quite a lot of effort to get this screening on, to get Bill there to see it, because he's not a fan of seeing his own stuff, and we were watching the movie, and you leaned over to me and you suddenly said, "This is a television version of the film." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, there's scenes missing." And I said, "No, Bill, I've seen this film about 60 or 70 times. Uh-huh. There's nothing missing." Uh-huh. And what you were remembering was the script.
The first prints. And also the earlier prints before people...
Because you literally hadn't watched it since it had been made.
Yeah. No, there were usually when I cut a film, it's maybe 10, 20 minutes too long. So you always go through that kind of process of... Which is the worst process of all, when you're arguing with the producer and the... exhibitors about the final. There was one film in which I think we took out one frame at the start and end of each shot, you know, and that through the course of the movie ended up bringing out the minute or two that they wanted out, so we didn't actually lose anything.
Burt Lancaster, why did you go for him? Because from what I can gather, he kind of took half the budget.
No, that's a myth. There are lots of myths in the film business. No, that wasn't. I don't think that was true. He had a fairly modest fee. I mean, he liked golf, and we offered him 3 weeks in Scotland with a nice car and a driver to take him around. And I think we had about 2 weeks' work out of him, and he played golf for a week. So, and he got some money. But no, it wasn't. That's one of these myths, you know. The Hollywood comes to Scotland and all that stuff. As I say, the film business is full of myths.
And why did you want him particularly?
Well, we needed an American character. We needed someone with a bit of a profile. Obviously, if you don't have a profile and you're 70 years old, then there's something up. So, as an actor, he was one of quite a short list. And also, I had, I had an interest in him because he was doing interesting stuff at that point. He was doing his European stuff with that guy whose name I forget.
Louis
and
Mal.
Who? That's right, he was doing some Louis Malle stuff. That wasn't Italy, yeah. He did Atlantic City, yeah, that's right.
Good heckle.
Yeah. Is Louis here or no?
I don't think that was Louis Malle.
No, that was the correspondent from Finland.
Who we have. And was it your idea to get Mark Knopfler in to do the sound?
Honestly, no, because that was a producer's kind of thing. At that time, the only way you could get people interested in a British film, and the only way you could kind of raise the profile for it and get the finance was to do that kind of package. And Mark, as everybody knows, was his big period with the band. He's a very smart guy, very very intelligent, guy beyond being a great musician. And so I think we got him in at a very early stage. He read the script. Because there was a lot of music in the film, it's a very rare thing to happen. He actually came on location. And he organised the Cayley band for us and stuff like that. So it gave him a real head start on the music, because he kind of soaked up the atmosphere of the shoot and the locations.
And the Cayley band do end up on the soundtrack, don't they?
I think they are. Yeah,
yes, yeah, they are. Yeah.
I can tell you they do.
They turned up. They turned up in that thing that we had in Pennon last year. They're still going strong.
They are.
The Ace Tones.
Mark Knopfler tells a story about recording the music for Local Hero. He said about watching the film and playing his guitar along to watching it, and literally to try and make the music come out of the landscape. And in very much, I think, the same way as something like Paris, Texas. It is a film in which the sound of the soundtrack is so closely tied up with the landscape of the movie.
I agree, yeah. There are one or two moments. It happens quite a lot in Scotland. Sometimes you talk about sound, but also it looks sometimes you're standing on a beach and the kind of sunset, it looks as if the light is coming out of the rocks rather than, bouncing off them. And it's the same thing. I remember Peter Maxwell Davis. He used to, the composer lives in Hoy. He used to say that he lives in Hoy, which is a piece of rock sticking out of the North Sea, Atlantic Sea, just where they meet, the Orkney Islands. And he says, well, he's obviously a very spiritual kind of musician and composer, but he says that he feels the vibrations of this island in a heavy sea. Yeah. You know, that's It's all there. That's all music is, isn't it? Vibrations.
And is that phone box still there? I mean, you did a piece on this for the show, for the film that you did.
I've got it in my back garden.
That phone box?
Yeah. Well,
we should talk about this after the news, because it's not, the phone box that's there is not the real phone box. No. So we should have talk about this.
Yeah, I'm an expert on phone boxes in movies. They always get it wrong. They always use the rectangular glass instead of the square glass. They always get it wrong.
This should be a major feature of the next bit of our conversation, shouldn't it? Phone boxes in movies.
Yeah. What are phone boxes like in Finland?
Our Finnish friend there, he's glazed over. Steve in Bristol's been doing some maths, because you have a lady from the south of France and a gentleman from Finland. Steve says, I hate to tell you this, but it depends on where the lady is from, but Helsinki is 1,040 miles from you, and the south of France is 1,400. So it appears as though we gave the award to the Finnish gentleman completely mistakenly, and it should have gone to the south of France lady.
So the Helsinki gentleman has to give back the award.
Yeah,
is that right?
I think that's right.
So basically, he's come here, we've been rude about his country, we've given him a non-existent award, then we've taken it off him and given it to the French. How happy is he?
Mark in Newcastle, Local Hero is my favourite film of all time. Please tell Bill that his work has brightened my life.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mark. That's nice.
Brendan and a lot of other people's lives by the sound of it. Alan in Kent, I've spent years adapting and quoting Gregory's Girl, my all-time favourite film. But Oh, That's a Dead Lost Son, We Play in Real Cricket Boots in This Club is sadly lost on teens turning up to play in trainers now. Ross in Glasgow, can you tell Bill to say hello to Graham High School? They've just finished their school show, Gregory's Girl, the musical.
All right, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know about the musical?
That's a Creef, I think, isn't it? Is that Creef? Who knows? That Creef isn't very far away. It's only 60 miles away. It wouldn't win a prize.
But are you aware that there's a musical?
Yeah, they wrote and asked if they could adapt the book, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's good. That's good news. I'm sorry I missed that. I thought it was later in the year.
I reckon if you asked, they'd put on a special edition just for you.
Well, we'll do that.
I mean, the most exciting thing, I would imagine, something is going to get Mark all of a quiver, and if we look closely, he's going to start welling up, is that you are working on another film.
Well, I'm never not working on a film. I'm always writing. I mean, because I'm a writer as well as a director, it's usually a 4 or 5 year period between movies, and then then you have to go through the business of financing it and all that. So I kind of work on that kind of schedule based 5 years, you know. So this is something I've been working on for a little while. In fact, I wrote it initially for my kids when they were quite young, when they were 8, 9. And I just thought I would get them involved in ideas for a movie. It was just a kind of back-home movie with them. They're now 20 and 24, so that lets you know what kind of pace I'll work at.
So, and what can you tell us about this film, Bill?
Well, I suppose for me it's a little different. It's more of a genre film. It's more of a film that would... I tend to make kind of films that are fairly individual and can't be too easily categorised, but this, I would say... I'm being very, very, very wary here about how much I give away. But I would say it's a genre film. It involves supernatural elements. Wow. And I think if I change... I'm thinking of changing my name to Bull so that I could be William Bull. and then there would be two Guillermo del Toros, see?
But when you say it's a genre film, do you mean that... You mean a horror genre film?
Supernatural, that's about as far as I'll go at this stage, yeah.
Okay, because I am genuinely all a quiver at the thought that you might actually be making a horror film.
No, it's not horror.
It's got ghosts.
Slightly less quivery.
No, I'm the guy who fainted at Ben Hur. I'm hopeless with that. I'm hopeless.
Does it involve
with cinema blood?
Does it involve possession?
No, that's an interesting.
I'm a quiver again.
No.
Does it involve priests?
No.
Ectoplasm.
No. It doesn't go that route. No.
It's been a roller coaster of emotions for me over here. I don't know how you're bearing up.
Who's in it?
No one so far.
All right, so we actually haven't learnt very much at all.
No,
we?
Yeah. But that's because I haven't written it yet.
So no one's in it, it's not written.
Yeah.
And it might be about the supernatural.
Yeah, and it'll cost about $10 million.
Right. And it's called?
The working title is Exile at the moment.
Exile.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Scottish Exile?
Is it Scottish?
Is it about a Scot in exile? or Scots.
No, it'll be about a spirit in exile, won't it? You think supernatural?
Right, that's enough, thanks. No more.
Well, you're not telling us anything, so we're going to have to argue about it anyway.
Yeah, but you're being staggeringly literal.
He's getting too close.
But yeah, because before I said I'm making a supernatural movie, it's called Exile. Oh, you're Scottish. About a Scottish exile.
That's because I might be right.
Yeah, but you're not. You're wrong. It's going to be about the other thing, which I'm now not allowed to say. Sorry, the one thing I do want to ask you to say this because it's important. When we talk about local hero, and an awful lot of people, when they think about local hero, think about it as being, you know, a very sweet-natured movie. There is a great darkness in it. And you famously described local hero as being Brigadoon meets Apocalypse Now.
That's right. That was my pitch to the studio. Yeah.
Tell the audience what you meant by Brigadoon meets Apocalypse Now, because I think that is exactly what it is.
Well... It's just when you're pitching to a studio, you've got to come up with as small a number of words as possible. And I thought that put it together. It's the idea of Brigadoon, the magical Scotland, the whimsical Scotland, the non-existent Scotland, really, the dream, the myth, which is, you know, say the average American's perception of Scotland. And you meld that with, at that time, Americans' kind of imperialistic, stance around the world. There was a point right about then when it looked as if America was just going to take over everywhere. Maybe it has and we don't know, and maybe we've forgotten that we have all been taken over. But that was the idea. It was just American imperialism and the magic of, you know, the kind of magic, the screen magic of, you know, the way the Americans imagine Scotland. And it was a little, ironic. I wasn't really meaning it, but...
No, but it does sum up the film. And Simon was talking about the telephone box, which famously, if you've been to Penn, the phone box that is there, it's not the phone box that's in the film because it's in the wrong place. The phone box that's in the film, you faked, right? You put it on the end of
that's
the jetty.
That's right. We just kind of had a replica phone box and we stuck it on there just to get the nice shot, you know, the nice picturesque shot. I forget, was it there? No, it was gone when we were there.
No, the original phone box is still there, and apparently British Telecom a few years ago recorded that as the most rung phone box in the UK. Because as you all know, at the end of Local Hero, you see the phone ringing twice, and that number, which I don't know what the number was, people would ring it up to make the phone box ring because they sort of thought it was like being in Local Hero. But the other famous thing about Local Hero is that ending happened... Because the Americans said to you, we love the film, we really love the film, we really love it so much, we'd like to give you $2 million to go back and film a different ending in which he stays.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It was too sad that the Yank went home, the American went home, so they wanted him to stay, and they suggested that we go back to the beach and reshoot the beach scene, and this time he jumps off the chopper and says, hell, I'm staying here, or whatever. And so... That was a pretty terrifying thought. It was actually not so much changing the ending, it was having to go back and shoot again, really.
Now, we ought to say, Bill, just before you go, I had to give Mark a bit of a lecture before we started because he's prone to do really rubbish impressions and character voices, which he thinks sound sort of roughly like the person that he's talking about. And I said, look, don't do a Scottish accent, you know, just don't. I know you'll be tempted to do it, but, you know, it won't sound very good when we're doing a show from Edinburgh.
He plays the bagpipes, you know.
I know he can play the bagpipes. I had to persuade him not to bring the bagpipes along as well, on the basis that might be a caricature. Anyway, so, but then, and you took that, that's very wise advice.
Yes.
But you then talked about a very famous Scottish accent.
This is, I mean, some of you will know this already, but Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire, when Robin Williams does, you know, he dresses up in drag and he walks around doing that incredibly camp Scottish accent that's not a very convincing Scottish accent. And he was asked by a journalist, who on earth is that accent based on? And it's you. Because he'd worked with you and he insisted that his performance as Mrs. Doubtfire was him doing you.
Ah, right. I thought it was Mick, the cameraman, that he copied, but it was me, was it?
Well, apparently he said it was you. It doesn't sound like right. I were you, I'd sue.
I'd sue, yeah.
Bill, it's been fantastic having you on. I really appreciate you joining us.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much indeed. We look forward to your new movie, which is clearly going to be about Scottish exile.
Yeah, thanks for dragging me back to the cinema like this. I haven't been in a cinema for a long, long while.
When was the last time you came
smell
to cinema?
Smell of popcorn, the smell of victory.
When was the last time you were in a cinema?
It'd be maybe 7 or 8 years ago. It's a mall thing. I can't handle the mall thing. Bring back the little theatres.
What was the last time... Do you remember the last time you queued up to see a film?
The last movie I saw in a mall was Wedding Crashers, so maybe it was that. That put me off for...
Yeah, you're going to do better than that. Bill Forsyth, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live. Hello, me again. To watch my latest reviews, take a trip to www.bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode for the Kermode Uncut blog.